Hello again, this is Malia Hill for the Grassroot Institute of Hawaii with this week's Grassroot Perspective podcast. Grassroot Institute, our state's foremost think tank on free market and liberty. This week I was going to come out with a bunch of tax proposals that are before the legislature, this session, but it came to my attention the Oscars are this weekend, and I kind of want to take a little break from complaining about the endless efforts to make living in Hawaii more expensive, and instead just look a little bit at liberty, the free market, and these kind of ideals in film and pop culture. What kind of brought this to my mind is that the Moving Picture Institute, which promotes liberty in film, has basically released a first annual Liberty in Film Awards. They're going to be on Fox News this weekend to talk about it, but they've announced what it is, and I'll let you know. They have a best screening on a Jumbotron, which is Honor Flight, which set a world record for the largest film screening of all time when they got 28,442 people into Miller Park Baseball Stadium for a screening. I like this one. Best explanation of what makes charity possible goes to The Dark Knight Rises. When Bruce Wayne asks Alfred why the Wayne Family Foundation is no longer contributing to the boys' home, Alfred explains that contributions are made possible by the profits of their company. No profits, no charity. Let's see. The best adaptation of an impossible to adapt book, Atlas Shrugged Part 2, which is apparently much better than Atlas Shrugged Part 1. Someone will probably run up and take away my libertarian credentials for this because I'm not a fan of those books, and I do agree that they're very difficult to adapt to film. I know that Atlas Shrugged Part 1 is the kind of thing where you really have to embrace them. You have to be interested on this for the sake of the message and your love of the book, because as a film alone, it's flawed. The next award, DVD You Need to Rent Today, Won't Back Down. This was the school choice story that really got on the wrong side of the teachers' unions and kind of got overlooked. I would say that's partly due to bad marketing, because if you'll recall, you'd see Maggie Gyllenhaal on it, and she was obviously some sort of concerned something. And it was obvious it was a fight against schools, but it just wasn't really well marketed. It didn't give people the idea of what it's about. And I think it's a shame, because there's been a lot of great work on teachers' unions, on school and school choice, and the problems with our schools in documentaries. The Machine, The Cartel, there's any number of them. The Lottery, which is heartbreaking. It's a very difficult one to watch. But by the way, most of these are on Netflix, so you can always catch up with them on there. Really, really break down the huge flaws in our education system. And I felt like the time is right to kind of start tackling that in fiction, in a major motion picture. So it's a shame that Won't Back Down didn't really find an audience, because it is an important message. And it's one of the few important messages that from our perspective, from the side of liberty, from the side of school choice and making changes to education, that I think can find an audience and actually make a difference through the medium of film. Anyway, best one-liner with a Sudanese diplomat goes to You and Me. This was from filmmaker Emmy Horowitz, who asks a Sudanese diplomat what caused all the deaths in his country, and the man tells him, with a straight face, that they were caused by global warming rather than genocide. Horowitz then asks if the solution to the death in Sudan is more hybrid cars. Okay, I will say that Sudanese diplomats and the UN in general, making them look silly, maybe shooting fish in a barrel, but this is pretty bad even for that. The best performance is a publicist for Arab Oil, Matt Damon in Promised Land. Damon's anti-fracking film was funded by the government of Abu Dhabi. That's one of those films where you can tell just from the trailer. I remember watching the trailers and wondering if I somehow traveled back in time to 1984. Like, oh no, good farmers, bad oil companies. They're going to send someone and he's going to be overcome by the warmth and the realness of the community and remember his roots. Oh God. So yes, admission, I didn't see that because you lost me at the trailer. I can handle a certain level of preachiness in movies. I think that if you go to movies, you sort of accept that might happen, but when your trailer is preachy, you've lost me already. Best one-dimensional portrayal of wealth and poverty, Titanic 3D. Nearly every wealthy person in Titanic is one-dimensionally greedy, self-absorbed, and evil, and every poor person is kind-hearted and well-intentioned. Okay, kind of cheating, I think, since Titanic came out way back in the late 90s, but also a good point. One of the least of the problems with Titanic, to be fair, because, you know, yes, it's extremely two-dimensional characterization, but that's sort of throughout everything that has to do with Titanic. It's two-dimensional, except for the effects. Best waste of a good idea, Red Dawn. For fear of offending the Chinese government and losing Chinese box office, the filmmakers used CGI to replace China with North Korea as the villain in this disappointing remake. Disappointing remake is an understatement. Red Dawn, I can't remember how many years ago, several years ago, was actually proposed as maybe the most conservative film of all time, back when it was Russians and Patrick Swayze. And, you know, when you watch it, it's still, you know, watch it on those random Sunday afternoons when it shows up on TBS, you can still sort of see that. It you can see the 80s influence, you can see it and think, oh, politics of another time, but it's pretty true and pretty unafraid in that way. As soon as I saw they were making a remake, I almost immediately figured that this is what was going to happen. I don't really see studios today having the courage to do that. No one has the courage to defy the international box office anymore. No one has the courage to defy all the complaints about discriminatory portrayals that are almost sure to come out. That's why, you know, we're really limited on villains now. What do we have? We have North Koreans. We have sort of ambiguous terrorists. It's not really a surprise that Red Dawn disappointed. It would take a lot of political and other kinds of courage to stick with that in the face of the money issues involved. And of course, at the moment you've given up on that, you give up on all sorts of, you know, ideas about the integrity of the film to begin with, the integrity of the story. If you're not really willing to stick to your guns on their villain or what your story is trying to say, then your story's not trying to say anything at all, and you're going to end up with a bad movie. Best propaganda piece for toddlers, The Lorax, the Dr. Seuss story that was, when I was a child, just about conservation, is now turned into an anti-capitalist propaganda for children. And oh boy has it, because I have children, and they watch The Lorax, and then they tell me about bad companies and destroying the environment. It's very irritating. I don't know when they watched The Lorax, because I would have forbidden it if I'd had the chance, because, again, you want to talk about movies that lost me at the trailer. But I will give you this. It looked beautiful. And, you know, therein lies makes it such great propaganda for children. It is a great-looking movie. And it has all that Dr. Seussian appeal. If only it had stuck a little more clearly to the original theme, because there's this idea that conservatives, libertarians, and such, that we hate the environment, and, you know, we don't do much to combat that, but that's beside the point. We, as a myth, a political myth, it is strong, and it only gets stronger with things like this type of movie. The thing is, there always has been a place for conservation in conservatism and liberal libertarianism. I mean, look at Teddy Roosevelt, who was a great conservationist and also a Republican. So the idea that, you know, that we simplify this down to, you know, corporations bad, destroy trees, the end of it, is not only wrong and irritating, but extremely problematic, and especially when that's the message we're giving children. So now I spend huge amounts of time explaining that it's okay to use paper, that, you know, paper is actually ordering more trees and such like that, because the oversimplicity of these messages. And finally, fan favorite, The Hunger Games. The Moving Pictures Institute supporters demanded an award for The Hunger Games, the dystopian future tale of a centralized government that forces teenage citizens to fight each other to the death for sport. I suppose it's possible there are people who haven't seen it or heard it or know anything about it. It is I'm not sure the extent to which we can call it a liberty-based or liberty-loving film, supporting film. I suppose it technically does. One of the funny things is, you know, if you watch the extra features on their DVD or, you know, read other people, The Hunger Games is one of those books that people kind of grab onto regardless of their political affiliation. It's very easy to make it stand for what you want to stand for. So I think as somebody who loves liberty, someone who leans to the right, you look at the Hunger Games and you'll say, this is a message about the tyranny of government, the tyranny of big government, and its lack of respect for human life. Secondarily. But I've seen any number of liberal left-leaning commentators look at the Hunger Games and see that that tyranny of government is coming from the right. Inevitably, President George W. Bush is mentioned. So I wouldn't say that it has a clear message of liberty. I would say it definitely has a message of liberty, but you know, it's not taking a particularly courageous stand to say, I have a strong feeling that making children kill each other for sport and political gain is a bad thing. That's not exactly going to get you a lot of points for me in terms of, you know, brave stands for liberty. I'll have to say, I think there's some things that were overlooked here. And, you know, the sidebar on why is this important? Why do we care? There's a tendency to kind of give up on Hollywood, to say it's lefty, it's liberal, it's always going to come out with these anti-capitalist, anti-corporate messages, and, you know, anti-conservative, for if that's what your concern is, these anti-conservative messages, and there's just nothing much we can do about it. You know, we can try to make our own movies, we can complain when it's relevant, but that's just the way it is. But we can't see the pop culture. The popular culture is extremely important in affecting the way people think about things, the way things change. And to just sort of give up and give it over to leftist thinking is a big mistake, you know. So we need to be involved, we need to be engaged, you know, that we need to encourage young filmmakers, young artists, young thought leaders to go forward and put these libertarian, these strong beliefs in the free market and what good capitalism can be, the good of capitalism. We need to encourage that. And we need to vote with our dollars too. You know, Hollywood would have said The Passion of the Christ a few years ago was a complete loser as a film. But the box office basically told them, look, people want stories about faith and religion. This is a profitable enterprise. There is a good to be gained, and we can't simply just drop out and say we're not interested anymore. So I was going to say there's some things they overlooked. Now, I'm not going to go into specific documentaries like 2016, because I feel like, well, obviously a documentary with a point of view is going to have a point of view. The victories come from these appearances of these points of view in mainstream films. So I will say The Hobbit, of all things. Pretty much anything from J.R.R. Tolkien is going to have an element of this, because there's this message, a persistent theme in his works that basically extols things like home and protecting your home and, you know, sort of honesty, these basic good qualities. So there's a certain mild, albeit conservative, bent to The Hobbit and pretty much anything from Tolkien. A complete surprise, but Magic Mike, of all things, has a bit of American Dream to it. Okay, all right, it's about male strippers, and you probably aren't expecting me to defend that on this, but the central character of Magic Mike is someone who's working for and believes in the American Dream, and it's very clearly what motivates him and moves him and makes him sympathetic. So that belief in what is good about America, about the ability to raise yourself through hard work, is there. Also, male strippers, so you are forewarned, but it is there. And finally, I have to give a bit of a shout out to what I think is probably the single most libertarian character in movies today, which is Iron Man. Iron Man is one of the Avengers. The Avengers was probably the biggest movie this year, and therefore won't get anything at the Academy Awards except probably something for special effects or, you know, sound design, something like that. But superhero movies in general tend to be a little more careful in how they present the culture. I think maybe they're a little more aware of who their audience is. But Iron Man is actually possibly the most libertarian character in many, many years. He, in this Iron Man 2, he actually defends the privatization of national security as Iron Man. And it kind of bears him out, since as Iron Man, he is the best possible defense for the United States. He is a pioneer in private industry for new energy and clean energy, and basically development in general. And he doesn't really care for the government, the American government, the Congress, its various secret secret agencies. He does work with SHIELD, which is obviously the hyper-secret, more than CIA agency that is kind of the basis of all these movies. But he is hostile to government in general and suspicious. And above all, he's extremely secure in his belief that as head of Stark Industries, he will do huge amounts of good for the country and the culture. There's actually a speech he gives in the first movie, which is way many years ago, where he basically gives a reporter a hard time for focusing on the fact that his company makes weapons and avoiding the fact that the technology has turned into any number of things that help humanity, you know, medical advances and agricultural advances and the like. So right now, via the Avengers, which also has a Captain America and an old sort of dash of that old school retro American values kind of thing, which is nice. It's one of the nicest things about that movie. Those two are probably the biggest conservative libertarian influences in film for the last year or so, notwithstanding specific projects that intent, but of like mainstream films. If I wanted to give an award for all time, which I have to, I can't let this go without saying something, I have to mention Firefly and Serenity, the TV show and the movies, because if you want to find a show with, I'm not sure if it's unconscious or not, but a quiet libertarian message, I don't think you can do better than that. It's a story where the main goal of the protagonist is to escape the sort of blundering and occasionally murderous and extremely hostile actions of a huge sort of multi-planetary government based on the US and China sort of merging into one huge government. And it's made very clear that the government does all sorts of evil things, sometimes on purpose and sometimes just from its desire to control people and tell them what is best for them, and tell them the best way to live their own lives. And so the whole story of the Firefly universe is people who want to make that decision for themselves, essentially. So that's probably my vote for most libertarian mainstream world of recent years. But for this year, I'm giving that to Iron Man. So note to the Moving Pictures Institute, that was one that you overlooked. Anyway, last week we talked a little bit about the Steven Tyler Act and the effort to create a little special freedoms for celebrities in Hawaii, or special protections for celebrities in Hawaii. Got a lot of mail on that, and most of it basically going over the same points we discussed, which is, you know, the just hostility to this idea that because you're celebrities, because you're famous, you somehow have this special status that needs to be protected. So the arrogance of it, and especially in conflict with the First Amendment, is one of the biggest objections to it. So thank you very much. We will be back next week, and next week I'll be back to complaining about taxes. Never fear. So email me, follow us on Twitter at Grassroot Hawaii, and check us out on Facebook, Grassroot Institute of Hawaii. We're grassrootinstitute.org online, and I will see you next week.